Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again. This is episode 6 of Foul Territory, and we return to you, not as Jedi, but as pundits, as talking heads, as enthusiasts for all things baseball and all things sports. And we're very excited to get this 6th episode kicked off. Travis, my man, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia, and Ace of Bill. Episode 6, you know what that means?
What does it mean, boy?
It means that we're rounding up to 10. We basically got 10 episodes. Episode 6 is a roundup. Let's get into the sports roundup. That's not how I talk. But I'm excited to get into the 6th episode. Baseball. There's so much baseball stuff going on. I love it. The trade deadline just happened. Perfect timing for Foul Territory, the wonderful weekly radio show / podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Ace of Beale, thanks for the lovely introduction. And, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We are basically at 10. We're in double digits. You know, we feel like we're gaining a little maturity, but that's, you know, I feel like there's been progress, and it's great to have all of you with us. We're very happy to still be on the air. We've gotten some calls, from concerned people saying that, you know, we're not sure if this is fit for the internet. Maybe it's kind of a level of discourse, but also of vulgarity that, you know, the common man or woman, what have you, will maybe have trouble digesting it. And while we've told these people, thank you very much for your feedback. You know, we don't much care, and because it's what we love to do.
That's right. We're in episode 6, which essentially means if we were little human beings, we wouldn't have learned how to not shit ourselves yet. So stick with us. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
But we're not going to shit on you. We promise. No. We have a ways of containing that.
There are some teams that might get shit on today for their decisions at the trade deadline.
There are some. So we're tying all of that shit together in one big knot. So let's get into our favorite segment of the day. Our first segment, it always starts off the show because it's so great. Sweet Child of Mine.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and be
nice. Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, now let's go.
No.
And that's enough of that.
Every time I hear Tommy start to sing, I think it's like Colby Calais or something. I mean, I know he's a little guy, but good Lord, Tommy. Have some alto or tenor in your voice. Well, I'll get us started with my tweet of the week. And it relates to the Olympics because those are going on now. And I know we just mentioned baseball, but the Olympics do exist. And I'm just going to give you a short anecdote because the floor is mine and I'll do with it what I will. I really came into this year not that jazzed about the Olympics, kind of anti-Olympic, being as I am immersed in the Major League Baseball. campaign, but I have nonetheless found myself captivated, and it has no doubt been partly due to the super dramatic coverage by NBC Sports. So in that vein, my tweet is from the wise, the one, the only Rob Delaney, and is as follows. Me watching Olympic event. Holy shit, that was amazing. Commentator. Oh, that was not good at all. He must really be upset with himself. And, you know, I think this basically describes the process of watching a lot of these events for people, specifically events where there's judges who make the final call rather than, you know, one person finishing ahead of another one. So, you know, I think that's definitely something they just find every little thing to critique, and it drives a lot of people crazy because we're just sitting on our couches stuffing our face and thinking, good Christ, if I could only close up. So what do you got for us, Travis?
I'm going to throw a Rob Delaney one at you and also one of my own. The Rob Delaney one I thought was apropos, considering we were talking about being infants earlier. Rob Delaney tweeted, my toddler's favorite game is probably open and close a screen door 40 times until it breaks and then shit my pants. That's how babies are. And then my tweet, you can follow me at by Travis or the show at foul_territory, or you can follow Asa at Asa Base on Balls. Mm-hmm. For my next birthday, I think I'm going to explore different religious groups. Hashtag birthday sex. That's a clever joke. Yeah, there you go. You see what I did there. And that concludes a wow, wow, wow tweet child of mine.
I believe that's called a homophone when they sound the same but are spelled differently. But with that, we get you into baseball, and we're going to start at the top of the alphabet, that is, with the Atlanta Braves. And they made a move. They made a couple moves. They did pick up Miguel Bautista, but I don't think we're going to address that one.
I forgot that even happened. But yeah. Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
I helped you forget. You know, I was willing you to forget. but we did make a move, and it was with the Cubs, who everybody expected to be one of the big players at the deadline. But it wasn't one of the guys that everybody thought the Braves would get from the Cubs, which for half an instant was Ryan Dempster. And then, you know, past that, there was more speculation about Matt Garza. And we probably fed into that with all of our listeners and the fact that we said on this show, and we were quoting Frank Wren, but he did say if he was going to go after a starter, it was going to be a top of the rotation arm. He did say that. So
he did say that. We're on record, and so is he.
You know, a lot of things go down at the trade deadline. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of things are said that maybe aren't meant. But nevertheless, the Braves come away with Paul Mahalan and Reed Johnson to really just provide depth, I would say. Fortify the team, provide depth for the stretch run. But essentially, Frank Wren is saying, you know, this team can go all the way.
Yeah, he definitely threw away a little bit of the future for some of the present. But I have to say, I love this deal. Granted, they're probably getting top value for Paul Mahalan because he is on an absolute tear right now. I think he's like 5-0 with a 1 ERA in his past however many starts. Mm-hmm. And then Reed Johnson has always been a good utility guy, but he's hitting over 300 this year. So they're getting pretty good value, but we gave up what a lot of people consider to be a super prospect in Aroldis Vizcaino. And granted, the dude has a live arm, but when we got him from New York, the knock on him was, this guy has the injury bug, he's got good stuff, but he's still very raw. And what I saw in Atlanta was exactly that. Right now he's out for the rest of the year with Tommy John surgery. I think with his history, his past, his delivery, he's probably going to profile to nothing more than a power arm in the bullpen. And if there's one thing I trust the Braves with, it's accumulating good bullpen arms. So I think that we gave up virtually nothing. We also gave up, was it Todd Redman or was it Cunningham?
No, it was Cunningham. Redman was who we traded for Yanish.
Right. Traded Redman for Yanish. And he, and maybe a solid bullpen arm down the road. So I love this, especially with Tommy Hansen needing to go on the DL. We really needed another starter. Especially with other lefty, we can go righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, which is something the Braves haven't been able to do in forever. I think it's a great especially that down, and he's also Reed Johnson is a really good stick against left-handed pitchers. And that's something that the Braves, I think, like this year against left-handers. It's right. always been a thorn in our side. And, yeah, I think it really fortified our team. It's not a top-of-the-rotation starter, but to be fair, we did try to go get Ryan Dempster, who ended up going to the Texas Rangers later. And that's one of the things that I love about Frank Roran and the Braves is that every year we're going to make some move to help ourselves. And it usually comes out of nowhere, you know, as much as I obsess on Twitter and MLB trade rumors about what's going to happen. Usually what the Braves do is very quiet, and it was the same this year, but I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I'm maybe not as big of a fan. I like the trade. I'm still super disappointed that we did not get Zach Greinke, because I just think this team is built to win now, you know, and the rotation has not been a strength like people thought it was, but it's a good rotation. And if it was bolstered, and we did bolster it, I do like
Collins. You think the Braves are built to win now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, bringing Uglon, he was kind of a quiet signing, but you know, there's only so much time that we're going to be able to keep this core together. I mean, this is Chipper's last year. Got to do it for him. McCann's going to be a free agent in a couple of years. You know, they're going to have to make some really hard decisions soon. This is born last year. This year was a perfect storm for me, especially with the Phillies falling off and the NL East wide open. You know, I feel like this is the year, and I'm happy that we got Mahalam. I'm much happier about Johnson, to be honest, but I would have loved to see us get a guy like Greinke. I think we need that number one starter. I love Tommy Hansen, but he's not right. You can see that he's hurt. He throws 88 now. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, he's only gone five innings each of the past few starts. He's getting up one run in each, but he's walking a ton of guys, and he just doesn't have the same stuff. He's really struggling out there.
Yeah, and look, I will grant you, I would run Tim Hudson out there for game one of any playoff series. I will be on record as saying that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But am I confident running Tommy Hansen out there, number two? Fuck no. Sorry. Not right now. So I would have loved to see us go get Greinke and take a little bit of the pressure off Hansen. I mean, he's going to get some pressure off anyway with Mahalam. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, the rotation, it's solid, but we still, like, for a playoff rotation, it still just does not give me confidence for the playoffs. For the regular season, I like it, but Mahalam just doesn't pack the same punch. But
well, let me posit you this. I would say that the Cardinals last year didn't necessarily have the greatest rotation. Some guys just stepped up in spots, but they had an offense that could rake. And the Braves' offense is getting it done this year. We have a lot of guys who are kind of, as you said, the perfect storm. Chipper is playing a lot of games. He's leading our team in average and OPS, even though I don't think he technically qualifies. I mean, Bourne's having a great year. Prado's having a great year. McCann can see. The man's hit about 45 runs in the past 90 days. He's going nuts. He's hit it's the best he's felt in his career. Freddie's right. Hayward's right. And despite Dan Uglow, which we can talk about in a second, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe we are built to win now. Maybe we could make a run. But, or go ahead, what were you going
to
say?
No, I was just going to say I like that comparison to the Cardinals because I think there are some parallels. And, you know, Hudson as kind of the Chris Carpenter.
Right.
You know, you lose the young gun, Wainwright, Beachy. You know, and you're right. That maybe Paul Mahalam can be our Edwin Jackson or what have you. But,
yeah.
You know, I think it was a solid trade. It was way better than standing pat, and we're going to talk about that. But no, honestly, the offense, so happy about that. And Johnson is huge. We talked about this before the show when we were chatting, but he can play center. So Michael Bourne can actually take a night off, which he really needs probably once in a while. And he mashes lefties. So him and Prado, you got two guys that really, really are lefty mashers, not just your average righty on lefty. And, you know, he could spell Bourne against a lefty and be the leadoff man. So, and maybe not lose a whole lot there. So that's
yeah.
Huge. He's a versatile defender. Seems like a solid guy. And our bench is it's a great bench, especially when Simmons comes back and ostensibly, you know, if he's able to get back into the starting lineup, then you got some super subs in Giannis and, you know, potentially Pastrnicki. So,
yeah, and David Ross is the best backup catcher in baseball, so that would end up being a huge strength for the Braves.
Yes, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the strength and the depth of our team is yet another reason why hopefully we can beat out the Nationals and not have to futz with that one-game playoff bullshit.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what we're aiming for. And I think Frank Wren, like, I'm not calling him insincere by, you know, and I'm not trying to slight Holland by not calling him a top-of-the-rotation starter, but that's just a fact. And Wren, you know, he did what he could. And I think I'm glad that they didn't give up a starting prospect. That's the other side of it, because I'm going on about Greinke, but we would have had to give up. I mean, we weren't going to give up Teron. There's no way. But we would have had to give up Delgado or Minor to get Greinke, and he is a rental. And we do have Mahomes for another year. So despite all that offense, let's get to Dan Uggla. And I didn't even realize the depths to which he had climbed, because last year his slump was so publicized. It was the main story for the Braves, who, you know, were kind of having a very streaky first half, as they were wont to do, and had the worst slump of his career, you know, was hitting 180 at July 4th or whatever the fuck, and then went on this tear, you know, had the longest Braves hitting streak. But it turns out this year is just as bad, and you crunched some numbers. Tell me about it. Tell the people, I mean.
Yeah, I think the reason why, as you talked about, the streak last year was so publicized was because it was basically from the first day of the season, he didn't get a hit for the first few months, coming off of signing a huge contract for like $15 million a year. This year, he started off hitting about 270 with some power for, you know, the first month or two, got voted to the All-Star team because of it. But the past 2 months, June and July, oh my God, I didn't believe it till I saw it on TV earlier. And then I crunched some numbers and looked farther. In June, Dan Uggla hit 160, and you'd think, well, maybe the dude has hit some, you know, hit for some power, hit some home runs. No, the guy hit 3 home runs in June. All right, it's hard to do much worse than that. We go to July, Dan Uggla in July. He's hitting 115, or I'm sorry, he hit 115 because it's August now, with one home run and 6 RBIs for a month in an offense that has really been clicking. I mean, he walks sometimes, but Jesus, every time he goes up to bat, he pretty much just swings as hard as he can and hope he connects, and he hasn't been doing much of it.
Yeah, two things. One thing which is really funny is he just had an RBI double to bring the Braves within 2 runs, so maybe motivate him a little bit. That against the Marlins. Marlins are up 4-2 and hitting in the top of the 7th.
His ears are burning.
Yeah, but I want to agree, and this is a case of the stats definitely matching up with the eye test. I mean, Uggla has never been a guy that I would have praised his approach, but right now, it kind of blows my mind, because I know that they have hitting coaches, and these guys are professionals, and whenever someone does it, the first thought in my mind, almost watching any sport, when an athlete totally blows something, I just try to get, like, in their mind, what are they thinking right now? And, like, what are they thinking about? How am I going to not do that next time? And you feel like Uggla's doing that, but then it's just the same thing every time. And these numbers are incredible. I mean, he's hitting, so 160, 115, it's like combined 130 over a 2-month period when your team's in a pennant race and you're one of the high salary guys on the team. I mean, that's awful. And it's crazy because the Braves have been hot and he's hitting in the 7th hole. So it doesn't matter as much because you have guys that can step in, and that murderer's row is just incredible. I mean, guys have been interchangeable to the 3, from the 3 to the 6 hole really all year, but Hayward settled into the 3 hole, and I think the lineup is at its best when it's Bourne, Prado, Hayward, Shipper, maybe McCann, Freeman, Uggla, at least at this point against a righty. But So that begs the question, is he going to go on this crazy tear again? Is this going to happen again? Should we expect this?
I think that inevitably he has to heat up. I mean, I don't know what it is necessarily about what makes him so streaky. I remember last year, once he started going the other way and started, you know, pitchers have to respect that. When you can take a ball that's on the outside part of the plate, maybe an off-speed pitch, and just take what they give you. Not try to hit a home run, slap it to the opposite field. And pitchers are going to start to respect that. They're not going to give you easy base hits. Not in good shape. The dude is a bulldog, works out constantly. You can see it. So I would hope that he goes on a crazy streak, and I would hope that baseball karma dictates that because everyone on our team is hot, maybe if some people cool down is when he'll start to heat up when we really need him. But the thing that scares me most about him, you know, he can carry or he can not carry, but he's just so unreliable. What if we get into the playoffs and all of a sudden he's on a cold streak? One of the guys who could be one of your biggest assets all of a sudden, you know, is just totally hopeless. So I don't know. It's scary.
It is. And you're saying, you know, like maybe go the other way, you know, take these pitches on the outside. And I totally agree with you. But I think you're even crossing a river and a bridge that Dan Uggla is miles away from, because he's not even getting to that point. He won't even, like, I feel like he goes up, maybe he'll take ball one, but on the second pitch, he's swinging no matter what. And it's weird because he is taking walks. So it's like, clearly pitchers are just not throwing him any strikes ever. But then he completely compounded that by just chasing everything. And it just blows my mind that after 2 months, he hasn't just tried a completely opposite approach just for shits and gigs. But, you know, who am I to say? He's a professional, and then, you know, he still plays the game hard, and we love him. But I want to say something else. You know, this maybe doesn't make me feel so good about having him on the Braves long term, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, obviously, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, players go through slumps. Everybody has them. Chipper has had bad slumps in his career. McCann last year had a really, really bad year. You know, guys way more established and way more decorated than Dan Uggla have had swoons. But if he's basically establishing this pattern where you can count on a couple months of him just being a black hole, and like he'll get a hot streak at some point, but it's probably lucky these months are in June and July, and hopefully it gets hot in August, you know, but what if that black hole is in September and August?
I will say at the end of last year, when everyone on our team was slumping, he was one of the few guys on our offense that's hitting. But to that same point, we only needed to win one more game last year. And if he hadn't been a black hole for 3 months, you know, maybe that would help us have gotten over the hump.
Every win counts, you know, the ones
exactly.
That don't count one, but yeah, true story. You know, I love him. I like the way he plays the game, but he just doesn't seem like he wants to be a complete hitter. Like, he seems like he doesn't have aspirations of hitting above 240. Like,
yeah, I kind of wonder if his logic was, I got paid all this money because I'm a home run hitter, so now I need to go hit home runs. It's like, no, you got paid a lot of money because you're a good second baseman who can hit four power. Doesn't mean that's all you need to do.
Yeah, and he did have, you know, it was probably a fluky season, probably fueled by high BABIP, which we talked about last week.
True.
But he did have that season when he hit 290, so he probably would never hit 290 again. But what if he hit 270? Like, that would just be huge. Well, anyway, we hope he turns it around. And, I mean, I'm sure he will. He will turn it around from this. But in order to compensate for this, you really have to have a big streak, you know, if you want your end of the year numbers to look at all respectable. Let's get to what happened at the trade deadline.
Let's do it.
And I want to give a little disclaimer because, you know, every single baseball writer and commentator and pundit in the world, you know, has made a commentary or is making or shall make or maketh a commentary on the trade deadline.
Thou shalt make a commentary on the trade deadline.
Like some Monty Python shit. And so, you know, most people give out grades, so we're not going to do that. So we're going to do a little different. Hopefully it appeals to you more. We're going to go division by division because that's even more important this year, you know, with the emphasis on winning your division. So it makes those races even more important, especially with the imbalance schedule. So we're going to go division by division, and we're going to go over the winners, the losers, and then the confusers who might find themselves you know, you might think of them as they had a positive one or a negative one, but we're more questioning the direction of where they're going. Even if they made a good trade, was it a trade in the direction that, you know, makes sense for their franchise? So without further ado, Travis, why don't you take us to the first division?
Well, I guess since we've already touched one of the teams in the division, we should start off with the NL East. The once mighty NL East, earlier in the year, I was praising them and a lot of other people were because every single team in the division was over 500. And oh, how the mighty have fallen. All of a sudden, just about everyone in our division is sellers except for us and the Nats. I would like to – who should we touch on first? You know what? I said people are going to get shit on. Let's shit on the Marlins. They are some confused, all the permutations of that word, confused fish. A few weeks ago, they traded for Carlos Lee. A few weeks later, they're trading everyone, including Carlos Lee. And I just think it's awesome that they tried to trade him to the Yankees. Why would he say no going to the Yankees? It's an awesome place to play. Everyone would love you. You're in the greatest city in the world. And you can probably, you know, maybe get to go to a World Series. And he says no. So they're not going to get anything for Carlos Lee because he said no to that deal. They totally fucked over their fans and the people in that community by making them pay for a stadium when obviously no one's going to go to the games. So I'm glad that they're failing. And they are my confusers.
Yeah.
But speaking of, oh, how the mighty – oh, I'm sorry. Wait, you have anything to say about the Marlins?
No, I don't really want to say anything at all. The thing is they had half of a really good team built. They really were, like, on the right track for the first time in a while. But we shouldn't be surprised. But what other mighty falling were you going to get to next? Were they perhaps – starting with a
film? It was the 5-10 Phillies from Philadelphia, yes. After, you know, making a whole lot of trades in the past few seasons to bolster their chances to win a World Series, last year going out and getting Hunter Pence. This year, a lot of games under 500. They were huge sellers. They got rid of two-thirds of their outfield yesterday. Getting rid of Shane Victorino, a beloved Philly, and getting rid of Hunter Pence, who they just traded for last year. So what do you think about the Phillies trading these guys away?
I think it was the right move. They were dead in the water, and we already know. We talked about them signing Cole Hamels, and so they're going to build around pitching. So I think it makes sense. They know they've got some bad contracts, but they clearly weren't going to re-sign Victorino. They didn't get much for him. They got a couple decent arms, probably relievers. But Pence, they had for one more year, but he was going to be super expensive going through arbitration. So they traded him. I think they got good value there. They got Nate Scherholz, who's probably a platoon, you know, slash fourth outfielder, but a good bat, a good defender. And they also got a really good catching prospect, a guy named Tommy Joseph, obviously blocked by Buster Posey, although he plays some first base now in San Francisco, Buster Posey and Hector Sanchez, but apparently a good hitting catching prospect. And then they got a pitching prospect as well. So probably a good haul if Pence wasn't in their plans. And frankly, I think they probably bought a little high on Pence. And while maybe they're selling a little low, probably good to sell in general, because I think he's more what he is now and less what he was last year.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the interesting thing is that they didn't necessarily get a whole lot of major league ready material, or at least anything that's really going to help them contribute next year, which puts them in an interesting position next year. They have a whole lot of money invested in a few guys, and they didn't really plug any of those holes for the near future. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with a lot of those big contracts you were talking about. The other two teams in our division didn't really do a whole lot. I think the Mets, what did they do? I think they like traded a reliever and got some money or something. But I'm surprised that they were in the race for as long as they were. So you couldn't really expect them to do too much at the trade deadline.
True. You thought they would have sold. I mean, nobody to sell, I guess. I don't know. Scott Hairston, maybe?
Yeah, you think as like a utility bat, you could get like a C-level prospect or something?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a thumper, especially if you pay his salary. Maybe you could get like a low B, you know, like a guy who was a former good prospect with a faded star, and he's now 23, and you can change his ways. But the real loser is the Washington Nationals, leading the National League East, balling with their incredible, incredible best in the majors rotation. Yes, I said it easily. And they didn't do anything. They stood pat. They had a game, 2.5 games on the Braves at the start of play tonight. Was that the right thing to do?
Well, before I answer that, let me ask you this. Now that the Angels have Zach Greinke, do you still think that the Nationals have the best rotation in baseball?
I mean, I guess it's not as deep. No, I mean, I guess overall, nationally, best in the National League.
Best in the National League. Still an incredible rotation.
Oh, man. Yeah, the Angels is crazy. Although Herron, like...
Herron's not what he once was, certainly.
Like, not based on reputation, but based on performance this year, I think it is.
Yeah, that could be true. You're right. The Nationals didn't do anything. And you have to figure that they see themselves as a contender for years to come. Obviously, they have Bryce Harper, Jordan Zimmermann, Steven Strasburg. I mean, they just have a whole bunch of young talent. They do have Jason Worth coming back, and that's kind of like, I mean, I don't know if he's going to put up the numbers he used to in Philadelphia, but that's kind of like making a move for a bat. But their problem is going to be the rotation. I've heard some rumblings that there might be something wrong with Jordan Zimmermann. Strasburg is going to get shut down. I think it's official now. So, I don't know what's going to happen tonight. I think the Braves are losing, but they're only 2.5 games up. And I don't know. A lot of their rotation is getting shut down. So I think it's surprising that they didn't do anything. But I kind of get it, seeing as they have so much potential for the next few years.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they wouldn't have traded one of their top-level prospects. But you're right.
They
are getting Worth back.
They still could have done something.
Yeah, they're getting Worth back. So hopefully he starts, and then like Bernardina is not a starter, and he goes to the bench, and then an outfield of Morse, Worth, and Harper. It's pretty incredible. You know, not as good defensively, but offensively. They're gonna end up giving innings to John Lannon, Chin-Ming Wang, and Ross Detweiler, or some combination of them. I mean, I think Detweiler is definitely a step above the other two, but definitely not. You know, I'm sure they'll line up the good guys for when they face us down the stretch, but still not the best foot forward when the Braves made some additions, hopefully closing up some holes in their rotation. So that's the NL East. The NL Central. This was an interesting division. There were a lot of solid moves made.
Because there are so many fucking teams in the division. I'm so glad this is getting fixed. But yes, there were a lot of moves.
Yeah, it's true. So I'm going to compliment the Pirates because they didn't land, a star player by any means, but they added some solid pieces and probably the right move because this year, even though it feels right, still probably a year or two too early to go balls to the wall all in. So they added Wandy Rodriguez, as we talked about last week, and he is having half his salary paid for by the Astros. So that's solid. They traded for Gabby Sanchez, who not a great bat, but we've seen him have some solid years with a little bit of pop for the Marlins. And then they also added Travis Snyder, who is an interesting young hitter for the Blue Jays, who's been he's been up and down. He definitely has some serious power. And the Blue Jays GM, Alex Anthopoulos, I believe, is that his name?
The madman, AA.
Yeah, he's generally considered pretty smart. And so some people kind of say, oh, well, Snyder was traded by him. There must be something wrong. Well, you know, every GM gets fleeced once in a while.
Also, he traded for Colby Rasmus, and I don't think that's going to turn out to be the best move.
Well, he's got some power this year.
Oh, does he?
But I commend their moves overall. They, you know, they got an infield bat, an outfield bat, and a starter. You know, that's a pretty good haul. They did have to trade a reliever, so I guess they're confident in their bullpen, but maybe they're going to add another reliever.
Yeah, I like what they did, too. I mean, considering that they're the Pirates, they don't have a whole lot of payroll flexibility, and they don't want to mortgage their future. I think they did about as much as they could. I've always liked Wandy Rodriguez. He's a good left-handed pitcher, and like you said, Snyder, he's got some potential. And Gabby Sanchez, I mean, I always assume that a move out of Florida is a good move for any players, considering that the front office there. So I think that they did a good job. Another team that I think did a pretty solid job was Milwaukee. They didn't get a spectacular haul for Zach Greinke, but I think that they did about as well as they could have.
Yeah. I mean, considering he was a rental and considering there were a few teams in the trading, but it never felt like we were really seriously in on Greinke. And they got a guy who could potentially be a starting shortstop. So that's always valuable. You know, if he can even hit a little bit and be a solid fielder, like that's a valuable commodity. I agree. I think they did well. Did they trade anyone else? It seems weird that they would only trade him if they were, I don't know. I agree. I mean, the Astros basically went with the approach of, we know we don't really have any good players, but we're going to try to flip all of these guys for just a shit ton of prospects, and a couple of them will work out. And I think that's a really good strategy. And Jeff Luhnow, the GM for the Astros, is new this year. He was part of the St. Louis front office and came over to the new Jim Crane-owned Astros, who will be going to the American League. And I think that's a good strategy. You know, they like Carlos Lee. I can't remember who they traded him for. I'll look it up in a sec. But we'll have the girls look it up. But you know, I think they got like 15 prospects. So I think it's a good strategy. You know, if three or four of them pan out, if they can get a couple of regulars, you know, and a starter out of it, they'll probably be pretty happy.
Yeah, if I'm the Astros with that record and with that team, I am having a for sale sign on my lawn 24/7. Anyone you want, you got it. I would say that they have one good player at this point, and it's Jose Altuve, the good second baseman. But shit, we'll trade him too. I mean, they can't build for anything.
No, wait. Oh, this should have been my tweet of the week. Oh, I forgot about this. Somebody tweeted, the Astros are willing to trade anybody over 5'6".
Young, tiny Jose Altuve.
He is the only one who is protected by that. And the Cubs got some guys too. They got a good third base prospect from the Rangers, not Mike Ault, but someone else. You guys know who it was, right? And they also got Vizcaino from us, who is a bit of a project. You know, he's getting Tom. You know, he had Tommy John. He's in recovery, so I guess they like him enough that they're like, we're going to put the time into really developing this guy. The question is, how does the major league service time work? And I don't actually know that. I'm going to have to get an expert in here at some point to give us some information, probably next week on that. But a player's control with the team is based on how many years of service time he has. So teams generally have 6 years of time where they control a player before he's a free agent. So the question is, if Vizcaino came up, was in the majors and got hurt in the majors and was on the DL, is his clock still running? You know, how many more years of control do the Cubs have? You know, and you got to consider he has to have a whole year-long rehab process or whatever. And the third baseman was Christian Villanueva. And they also got
Patrick's.
But he's supposed to be a real solid hitter, not a big power guy, but just a pure hitter and a very capable third baseman.
Nice. Well, I should probably try to start breezing through these.
Yeah, we should.
Cardinals. Didn't really do much of anything. I believe they added Edward Mujica. I don't know how to pronounce his name. But yeah. He's a solid bullpen guy. They have, I mean, it's kind of like last year. They have some sticks up and down the lineup. They have your boy Lance Berkman back, who hasn't really done anything since he's been back.
Big Puma.
And, yeah, they really needed some pitching, and they didn't get very much. So they are some losers.
Yeah, they are.
And how would you label the Reds? Do you think they're winners, losers, or confusers? They're the last team in the division.
They're a little confusers. I mean, Broxton is solid, but like if you think if there's one strength on their team, it's that ridiculous bullpen.
Yeah, their bullpen's crazy.
And Marshall, and it never hurts to have another bullpen arm, so clearly that's just going to be a huge strength. But, you know, I thought they might add another bat. With Votto injured, you know, that's going to be a dogfight in that division. You know, it seems like you would want to take that extra step to separate yourself. But their offense is pretty darn good with Ryan Ludwig, like, mashing lately as their fourth outfielder. So I mean, I think they're in a good position, but I thought they would have done more. The NL West really was interesting, though. Let's get to that. So I live in San Francisco, and I'm reporting from here, so I'm going to start with the Giants.
Do it!
I think they made a good move. I don't think Hunter Pence is a great hitter, but I think this park suits him well. He's got gap power. He can pop it out. And the park is a pitcher's park, but it more suppresses lefty power than it does righty. You can hit home runs out to left. The wind will blow out there sometimes, but it's really impossible to hit them out to right. So I think that's a solid addition. They traded a catching prospect. They're rich in catching prospects. You know, they traded Scherholz, who that's fine. I think it was a very good move. And they also added Marco Scudero, who's a really good, like, utility guy.
Very solid bench piece, yeah.
Yeah, honestly, probably should be starting with them because their starting middle infield is Ryan Terrio and Brandon Crawford, who is a solid defender but makes mental mistakes and also can't hit with a lick. So Scudero probably is a better option at least one, if not both of those positions. If they could clone him, they probably would.
And I'm going to kill two birds with one stone here because the Giants are going to be competing against essentially the Dodgers down the stretch for, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but there could only, it might be hard to get that wild card spot if the Pirates and the Braves / Nationals keep it up. So the Dodgers made some big moves. They got Hanley Ramirez, which we talked about in our last show, so I'm not going to touch on that. They also got Shane Victorino, who is a good bat. They needed another stick. You know, he's got some speed. He's got a little bit of pop. He's the flying Hawaiian. He can play some defense. He's been there before in the playoffs. So I think there's going to be some real battles down the stretch between the Giants and the Dodgers. And I'm with you. I like the Pence deal and the Scudero deal because that team just needs some offense, man. And if you can give Kung Fu Panda and Buster Posey a little bit of protection, I think it'll go a long way towards helping out that rotation, and maybe Tim Lincecum is able to completely flip around his second half, and all of a sudden you've got another World Series caliber rotation. So if I was on your side of the country hanging out with the Giants, I'd be excited about what they did.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting down the stretch, and the Diamondbacks are kind of right in that race too, you know, but they didn't necessarily make moves that they wanted to make. You know, they were a little bit, they were shopping Justin Upton earlier, which we had touched on in previous shows. It seems a little weird for a team that won the division last year. So it just makes you question their tactics. And then there was talk of them trying to swing a blockbuster Upton for Garza deal with the Cubs, but that didn't go through. So, you know, they kind of find themselves in no man's land and
yeah,
probably not in a position where it's worth going for a wild card spot.
It was almost Marlins-esque. I mean, they traded away Ryan Roberts, and then a few weeks later or a few days later, they traded for Chris Johnson to plug in that hole that they traded away.
Yeah.
And then they tried to trade for Matt Garza. So I think that they've had a recent surge that has kind of confused them a little bit. So that's why they're a confuser.
Johnson is definitely an upgrade over Roberts.
Johnson's had a disappointing career so far, but it looks like he's starting to definitely put it together a little bit more.
Yeah, but they're a super confuser, no doubt.
Also, another confuser, I think, by far, the San Diego Padres. They have nothing really to be excited about for the next year or two. They had a lot of guys on the table that could have gotten some value for. Houston Street, Carlos Quinton, and Headley, we all heard, were on the table. All of a sudden, Houston Street re-signs, Carlos Quinton re-signs, and Headley stays put. I mean, maybe they'll move him later, but I don't understand not trying to get some value for these guys.
Yeah, I understand not trading Headley, because I think that while that deal does make him appealing, you know, I think he's a centerpiece, and a third baseman I think you keep, but definitely with Quinton, and definitely with Houston Street, with the way that they develop bullpen arms like we do. They know, you know, year in and year out, they just, Frieri, who's had the most dominant relieving year for the Angels, probably the best reliever in the AL this year, you know, they threw away for peanuts because he was like their long man. So that's a little perplexing, but you know, he has been real good this year. But with the Padres, honestly, in that park, knowing that you're not necessarily going to attract big bats and knowing that you're not going to be a huge payroll, to me, you just got to go for the best rotation. You just got to start stockpiling
potential pitching and defense
pieces. Just, yeah. And they have some parts of that. And I think Quinton, you know, it was a good idea to acquire him. And maybe they're going to move the fences way in. Maybe they're going to throw a curveball at us and switch things up. Who knows?
Yeah, or maybe build it on top of a mountain like the Colorado Rockies did. Hey. Colorado Rockies weren't very active. I mean, they're definitely out of it. They also have some pieces. Rafael Betancourt, I was positive, was going to get traded somewhere. He's a solid setup guy.
Yeah.
And Mike Kadire, I heard some GMs were saying they'd love to overpay for him. He's a good guy that can play a lot of different positions, have some pop, can hit for some average. He's been there before with the Twins. Yeah, I don't understand what the Rockies are doing.
Yeah, me neither. So fuck them. Well, let's go to the American League because it's already 6:47 in the West Coast, almost 10 o'clock, 13 minutes till the hour.
And Jesus.
So the American League East. I want to talk about the Orioles because they didn't do anything, and I'm a little disappointed. Last week we talked about Pythagorean winning percentage and how the Orioles probably were overperforming a little bit and maybe getting lucky in certain situations and maybe not doing things at a sustainable pace. But their offense is really good, and while their rotation is shaky, all that can change if you acquire a pitcher. And they didn't really do anything. They were in on Joe Blanton, apparently, till the end, but no dice. So it seems weird that, like, you wouldn't even get Joe Blanton if you were intent on him. You know,
yeah.
Not to go after a stud, but it seems like you would at least get something, you know, to try out, you know, that would potentially be better than the young guys that have just been getting clobbered by that division.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that they did do is get Jim Thome, which is just, it makes me really sad because it reminds me of last year when the Pirates thought they were in it and traded for Derek Lee. It's kind of a washed up, like, you know, at bat every once in a while. So that makes me sad. I think that's a little bit of foreshadowing. In terms of the rest of the division, hell no, we're not talking about the Red Sox. They're not in it anyways. We already talked about Ichiro to the Yanks, and we touched on the Blue Jays. So let's move right on along to the AL Central. I'd like to give my winner of the overall trade deadline, the Chicago White Sox.
Ooh, nice.
I think Kenny Williams did a great job. He got a number of solid guys for virtually nothing. Kevin Youkilis has turned it around since he's been to Chicago. That wasn't a deadline move, but it was still a very good move. And he got Francisco Liriano and Brett Myers to add some pitching depth. So I was very impressed with what Chicago did. And I think Kenny Williams was my winner of the trade deadline.
That's a good award to head out. I do like that Liriano trade because, you know, he's another guy where he's been so up and down in his career. He's had the health issues. He's had real bad command issues. But he gets to go into Chicago and settle in as, like, the four starter. And, you know, he's expected to do well, but he's not expected to carry the team. And this year, when he's been able to located pitches and not walk a ton of guys, and for him that's like a pretty high standard. I mean, he can walk three guys. That's like a good control game for him. You know, he can pitch well. So I agree with you there. I'm going to say losers, the Twins, you know, thought they had some tradable pieces as well. They did trade Liriano, but don't think they got much for him. Let me check who they actually acquired.
They got a utility man named Eduardo Escobar and a decent pitcher, Pedro Hernandez. It's kind of disappointing, especially considering that the Twins usually come out so on top in these deals. You know, I'm used to them, absolutely. I mean, they got Francisco Liriano and Joe Nathan, and I believe another good player for A.J. Pierzynski back in the day. So,
go Brian Sabian.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, they traditionally do a good job, and another team that I think didn't do a very good job were the Indians. They had some tradable pieces, and they're not in it. Why not trade Chris Perez, who's been a pretty good closer, and get some pieces and build for the next few years?
Yeah, closer shelf life is like 3 years, and he's been good for 2.5, so.
Yeah, sell high.
Kind of pull the plug. Out to the wild, wild west, where my World Series winner, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, reside. And we had talked about it. They went out and they got Zach Greinke. And that just feels like a win-win trade. You know, we talked about it was solid for the Brewers. They weren't going to re-sign him. And for the Angels, this year is all in. They threw a fucking mountain of money at El Hombre, Albert Pujols. They are all in. They have the best player in baseball this year. Yeah, I said it. Mike Trout in the outfield.
Trout, Trumbo, and Pujols is a pretty nasty murderer's row in the middle of that order.
It certainly is. And the rest of the team is pretty solid. Like, there's not a lot of stars beyond that, but it's all a lot of solid pieces. And that infield is kind of underrated, but they play great defense. And that guy, Jean Segura, probably wasn't going to break in for a couple of years as more than a utility player. So it was the right move to make now. Urban Santana has been putrid. Yeah, I said it, putrid. And he needs to get out of the rotation. Dan Heron has been shaky. And you still have two studs up at the top. But I never thought C.J. Wilson was quite on the level of those other guys. So you basically have Jared Weaver kind of carrying it, although Wilson's been good. But you add Greinke to that mix. And that is some blonde firepower coming out of that rotation.
Yeah, when C.J. Wilson is ostensibly the one last year on the Texas Rangers team that went to the World Series, for him to be a 3 or a 4 in this Angels rotation is pretty nasty. What about their main contenders in that division? Not to disrespect the Oakland A's too much, but the Texas Rangers. Our boy, Ryan Dempster, who we thought was coming to the Braves, ended up going to the Rangers. I think that they need this a lot. They're basically looking at what's the name I'm thinking of? They're basically looking at Matt Harrison as the number one starter.
Mm-hmm.
Yu Darvish maybe. I mean, they needed another pitcher. I don't think Dempster is a number one, but they certainly needed him in that rotation.
Yeah, I agree. And they weren't going to give up Mike Old. They weren't going to give up Jerkson Profar. And they were staunch in that stance, and it paid off because they just waited him out. And the fact that Dempster vetoed that trade really helped. And the fact that the Dodgers were being cheap for some reason with Dempster, even though they were trading for bats, you know, whatever. But the Rangers definitely benefited. And now that I think about it, I don't know why we had the Yankees in the winners category. Ichiro solid, but I think they needed another pitcher to keep up with the Angels and the Rangers.
Yeah, I think the ERA this year is pretty low, but it's definitely deceiving. I mean, Ivan Nova's not a very viable starter as one of your top three in the playoffs.
Ivan Nova and Phil Hughes out there against Greinke and Weaver and Wilson and Darvish and Dempster and Harrison?
Yeah, you better hope CC is going straight Josh Beckett of 03.
True story. You mentioned the A's. They're right in it, but they didn't do anything. They didn't really pull the trigger.
Yeah, they're so used to trading away all their players at this point in the year that they don't really know what to do.
It's a force of habit for Billy Beane. His arm just starts, like, involuntarily dialing other GMs and pitching players to them.
Jonah Hill makes a crush his side.
No, not Martinez. Ramirez. That was my Brad Pitt as Billy Beane impression.
God, it was good.
Yeah, but It's probably the right move. Probably they thought, even if we somehow get one of those two wild cards, we're going to lose the play-in game. And even if we win the play-in game, somehow we're going to get creamed by the Yankees. I don't know. I mean, it's not optimistic, but I really think they're just going to hold out until they get a stadium in San Jose and just keep rebuilding, being a continuous cycle.
They have a good rotation, and they made some good moves in the offseason to get Reddick and Cespedes, and those guys have really injected their lineup. Yeah, yeah. Those guys have all really injected their lineup with some offense, which they really needed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then final team, the Mariners. I mean, they were out of it. They didn't do a lot, but you thought they might have. I guess they sold Brandon League off, so not too surprising.
So we only have a few minutes left. Would you rather – we have two very, very popular segments left. Would you rather do Give Me That Ass Not So Fast or our Fantasy Pickups of the Week?
Let's try to do both.
Oh, shit, dude. All right.
All right. You start off Give Me That Ass.
Give Me That Ass. This is the only time I'm going to talk about the Olympics is in this segment. Japan. Good for them. They're saying, give me that ass to some medals. They're third overall in the medals. And I'm going to give a shout-out to Japan because they've had some rough shit they've had to go through. They have 17 medals. They're in third place. And I think considering all of the stuff they've had to go through, that's impressive. And I'm happy that they have that to root for.
Give me that ass, Floyd Mayweather Jr. and his girlfriend slash spouse mate. Floyd's out of jail, guys. He's out, and he's going to be probably in Vegas betting a shit ton of money because that's what he does. So good for him.
Vegas, hide your kids, hide your wife.
Hide your kids, hide your wives. Hide his own kids and wife because the reason he was in jail was from a domestic dispute. And not to make light of domestic disputes, but entirely to make light of domestic disputes, I'm just impressed with his girlfriend that she's still around after sparring with Floyd. Maybe he was a little coy and playing defensive in that dispute as she was no doubt tossing flower vases. But good for him. He's out, and hopefully he'll man up and fight Manny.
Well, then that brings us to my not so fast. Also Olympics related, China. China's in first. Not so fast, China. America's in second. We're one medal behind, and we're coming for that ass.
All right. Not so fast, babies. We don't usually get political on this show.
Babies?
But I feel like this is worth mentioning because this week, Planned Parenthood celebrates an important milestone for women's preventative health. Birth control is now available at no cost to insured women, as well as essential preventative care. So that's a big step. We all know that the world has too many babies at this point. We need to have fewer babies because everywhere is very crowded. So this simple logic has allowed us to finally pass a law that makes sense, which seems weird in today's America, but that's my soapbox piece for
the afternoon. Nice. I'm going to J one off for birth control tonight.
Do it. I'm with you.
All right, 90 seconds left in the thrill ride. Let's get to the fantasy pickup of the week. I'm going to throw you my offensive player first. Josh Rutledge for the Colorado Rockies, the unheralded rookie, is having a baller call-up. He's been called up since about the middle of July, and since then he's the number 5 middle infielder in fantasy. He's hitting .455 with a little bit of power, and he plays in Coors Field, so you know he's going to continue to hit at least a little bit. So check out Josh Rutledge if you need a middle infielder.
Nice. My offensive pickup is Ryan Ludwig. He might not be available in your league, but he is a fourth outfielder. So he doesn't get a ton of PT, but when he's in there, he mashes, and he's been hitting for high average lately and hitting some home runs.
Nice. My pitcher you should pick up, and Asa might shit on me for this, Mike Minor. The dude is starting to put it together. He has an awful ERA. Most of his stats are not very good. But if you look at his past 4 games, he's only given up, I think, 2 to 3 runs. He's not walking anybody. He's striking out a lot of guys. He's a good prospect that's finally putting it together. And take advantage of it, especially if you're in a keeper league. He'll probably be good for the next few years.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to shoot any because I'm excited to see that. And I think he does have that potential to keep that going. My pitcher of the week is going to be Matt Harvey, a rookie from the Mets who got called up, finally getting his cup of coffee, and he's really good. He struck out 11 guys in his first game, had a little bit of a rough game against the Giants, but electric stuff, throws 97-98 with a great changeup. We're at the countdown. This has been episode 6 of Foul Territory on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks so much for being with us.
Foul.